the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in studio this evening, joined by Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road, weekdays 6 to 10, ESPN 102.5 The Game and NHL.com. Robbie, the Preds were just over 7 minutes away from coming away with one of the most impressive victories in franchise history, and then the Carolina Hurricanes delivered a gut punch with just over 7 minutes left with a Marty Natchez game-tying goal in Game 5 last night to tie the game at 2-2, and then Jordan Staal on a little bit of an awkward overtime goal with the puck bouncing. He gets a hold of it with his stick, and the Canes win the game 3-2 in overtime. The first time ever that three consecutive games in a single series have gone double overtime, and then single overtime in Stanley Cup playoff history, which I was pretty impressed to hear last night on the broadcast. So overtime doesn't go the Predators' way after it does go their way in games 3 and 4. What kind of gut punch do you feel that was for this Predators team that I feel like had a formula to beat Carolina and just simply let it slip away?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty massive. Really, I really did. And to your point, I mean, you watch the game, you don't come away from it thinking that the Predators dominated by any stretch of the imagination. But I felt like there was a certain way that they need to play on the road to be competitive and to hang in there and have a chance to win. And I thought for about 50, 52 minutes of that game, they played that way. And to get that close, to be up 2-1 in the third period, halfway through the third period with a chance to come away with a 3-2 win and go back home with an opportunity to close this thing out, it was right there for the Predators. So to have that slip away and then to ultimately lose it in overtime, that's a gut punch. I mean, you said this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, it kind of reminded you a little bit of Game 5 against Chicago in 2010. That was the first thing I thought of last night. And it's not quite as bad as that. Like, that was about the gut punch of all gut punches in that game when it comes to a first-round game. But this one was bad, and I think back to game two as well. There are two opportunities the Predators have had in Carolina to come out of there with a win, and they've been close. They just have not been able to do it. And, look, I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to get to a lot of that coming up today here in the show as they move forward here. But it felt like one of those games last night that you could look back on when this series is over and say, man, if they could have just closed the deal for the last 8 minutes of that third period, what could have happened in that game 6? I will never know, and it's on them now to respond. But I did get those thoughts last night after that game was over.
Under that scenario, Robbie, game 5 could be viewed as the one that got away in this series. Yep. If the Preds can't claw their way out of this and win each of the next two games, game 6 tomorrow night, the dreaded 8:30 start. Don't even get me started on this one, with pregame starting at 7:30. Preds Extra starting at 6, so we'll have a lot of coverage. I know you, Robbie, will be a part of the Preds Extra with Chase McCabe tomorrow night for a portion of that. But, you know, you bring up Chicago in 2010. This was not as dramatic. I mean, that one will be hard to top in terms of the drama involved in the loss. And the fact that they had a 5-minute major, I'm not even going to go through all the details. I don't want to put Preds fans through that again. But the gut punch, it was bad. This one is close to that, though. Like, the Pittsburgh losses, you knew early in those games, outside of game one, that it wasn't going for you. Like, it wasn't one of those things where you were clinging on to hope, and then with 7 minutes left, like in game 5 in Pittsburgh, I mean, that game was over in the first period. the Winnipeg game seven, I would say, was a bigger gut punch than yesterday because you had game seven at home. You felt like if you won that game that you probably could have gone back to the Stanley Cup final at that time. Don't know if they would have beaten Vegas after that series, but this is probably – this loss probably in the top five of all-time gut punches in Preds playoff history. And I think the thing – the events that are going to stand out the most to me if the Preds cannot come back and win this series – because if they do, everyone will forget about this loss. The three things that are going to stand out to me the most. Number one, Ryan Johansson in the third period having a rebound come right out to him in the middle of the slot with no one around him. He was untouched, and he misses the net. Doesn't even get the shot on net. That's number one. Number two is the power play opportunity in the third period where – Forsberg makes a great play to pass it over to Kaeli Yarncroke on a what should have been a one-timer, but Kaeli Yarncroke takes like 2 seconds to corral the puck. He shoots the puck and doesn't come close to scoring. And then I think the one that a lot of fans would agree with on this is the penalty. And it's not like I'm mad at the penalty that happened in the third or in overtime that negated the power play, because I thought the fact that you got a power play was pretty favorable with the Brady Shea hold on Mikael Granlund, but it's going to be memorable in the fact that that penalty led to the 4-on-4 and the first shift on the 4-on-4 Jordan Staal scores.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, I think there are about three or four areas you can point to last night that you just shake your head and say, man, if any one of those goes the direction of the Predators, is that the difference? Like, do they find a way to win? Like, to me, and I know, look, it's not always exact cause and effect, but to me, if Ryan Johansson buries that chance and they go up 3-1, they're winning.
Like, it's over.
They're going to win that game. Yeah. They're going to win. So I look back at that, too, and look, even if he doesn't score there, just get the thing on the net. Like, make Nedeljkovic make a save at that point. That's, to me, something that you've got to have from him there in that situation. And I'll even throw another one in there. You know, Roman Josi had the puck in the slot after the game was tied 2-2 and had a chance to shoot. And he, for some reason, decided to slide the puck back over to Philip Forsberg. They don't connect on the pass. Carolina takes it out of the zone. They go the other way. Like, I felt like the Predators at times last night were guilty of trying to force that perfect shot rather than just letting it rip. You brought up the Yarncroke example as well. The one-timer was there. I don't know if he would have scored or not, but the one-timer was there. Just let the thing fly. Who cares if you're trying to place it perfectly? Just see if you can beat the goalie. See if you can get there quicker than he can. That's half the time what it takes to score. So I felt like the Predators were guilty too often of trying to make that perfect shot. And sometimes that works, and that looks great. And other times you look back and say, oh, man, if I'd have just let that go, maybe that puck would have had a chance.
Well, We spoke of the formula that the Predators played with that we thought was their best chance of getting a win in Raleigh in this series so far. And it felt like that prototypical simple road game, that the cliche that you always hear about throughout regular seasons when you might need to steal a couple points and you find a way to do so because your goaltender played really well and you're able to simplify things. And at the same time, I thought that if you are playing that simple road game, you should be peppering Nedeljkovic, you know, as much as possible without, you know, going overboard with it and resulting in some odd man rushes the other way. And, you know, really since game two, they've been really good about not having a lot of breakdowns leading to odd man rushes for Carolina. But even in the first period, they had a lot of looks that they passed up opportunities on, and Terry Crisp in the first intermission was just railing on the team for not shooting the puck enough. So I think we saw that in the first two games as well in Raleigh. I don't know what the deal is there, because I don't think they really had that issue here in Nashville in games 3 and 4. I don't know. I mean, that loss. Go ahead.
And I'll say this, like, and I'm not making excuses for the Predators. I just wonder if this has been a factor at all, because I have noticed, whether it was Josi and Forsberg in the first game, like tripping all over themselves, or Forsberg did it again in game five last night. I mean, the puck's coming down, he's got a chance to shoot, and he just flubs it, like totally just flubs the shot. I mean, we never see that from Philip Forsberg. The ice looks like it just sucks in Raleigh, and that's not an excuse. Carolina's got to deal with that too. But I do wonder if maybe that's gotten in the head of the Predators of, let me make sure I've got this puck settled down before I shoot it. And I get it. That's a tough way to play, but sometimes you just got to battle through the conditions. They are what they are, and you've got to power through it.
No doubt. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Robbie Stanley here with you on this Wednesday evening, recapping a Game 5 overtime loss. Thankfully, not a double overtime loss. I think that would have made it sting even worse if it had gone to double overtime for a third straight game. Robbie, how do you feel like that top line performed last night? You know, Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson all looked really good together in Games 3 and 4 on home ice. And last night, they didn't seem to be as effective. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. They still got a couple of looks in the game, but you're right. They were not as effective. I think it's become apparent to me, especially in this series so far. We see it to varying degrees in series throughout the league. I think especially in this series, last change has meant a lot. Last change has meant a whole lot in being the home team. And it was obvious Brind'Amour wanted Staal out there against Johansson every time that he could get it. And Jordan Staal has been awesome in this series. Jordan Staal, when he's been against Johansson, has outplayed Ryan Johansson. And I thought he did so again yesterday. I mean, even a part that we don't talk about much that I think sometimes goes underappreciated about Ryan Johansson, that's how good he is at faceoffs. He got his butt kicked in the faceoff circle last night by Jordan Staal. And that was a big deal. So I think Staal's line did an incredible job on that line. Now, they still had looks. You brought up Johansson's look. I mean, all it takes is one. You've got to find a way to convert. I mean, you're not going to just pepper the net against Carolina every game, especially with Jacob Slavin back in there. I mean, they're just so good defensively. You've got to capitalize when you got those looks. I heard Willie Dawnuck talking about it today. In order for the Predators to win this series, they've got to be the more opportunistic team. It's just got to have to be what happens. And they weren't that last night. That's got to change as they move forward here into Game 6. I agree with you. I did not think that line was as effective as we saw in Games 3 and 4. In particular, I didn't think Ryan Johansson was as effective. I think, as has been the story with him ever since he's been here, if he's going at a certain level, everybody around him is going too. I think that's what makes him so valuable. It's on him now as they move into Game 6 to bring that back up to the level we saw in Games 3 and 4, where, quite frankly, I thought at times he was the best player on the ice for the Predators. And if he plays that way, I think it totally transforms that line and what they do. He was not at that level last night.
Tell me if I'm wrong. You brought up Jordan Staal, and I've said this multiple times in this series so far. I'm getting 2011 Ryan Kesler vibes from Jordan Staal, and not in the sense that this Preds fan base is going to just completely despise him after this and think that he's the worst human ever, like they thought with Kesler. But Staal has taken over at times in this series that reminds me of how Kesler took over in 2011.
Well, I think that's a great comparison, especially from this standpoint. Like, neither – you don't come into a series thinking, oh, my gosh, Jordan Staal is going to light me up offensively, or, oh, my gosh, Ryan Kesler, he's not Patrick Kane out there. So – you don't come into a series thinking that. He has just been so good two ways that it's been hard to deal with. And apparently 4-on-4, you need to avoid going to 4-on-4 at all costs if you're the Predators against Jordan Staal, because he's going to find a way to score a goal. That's something that I'd keep in mind if I'm the Predators moving forward here. But he's been awesome. I think that's a great comparison. And, you know, not only offensively where he's been able to capitalize, and I thought, you know, the first goal he scored in this series – where he's basically shooting from below the goal line and he just waltzes through Roman Josi and Matias Ekholm. I thought that was really soft defense from the Predators. Ever since then, when he's been effective around the net, I think it's just him barreling his way through and making plays, whether it's along the wall, whether it's in front of the net like we saw last night. He has been awesome. And right now, you're right. I mean, there have been times where he single-handedly has taken over in this series. That's what you need from Ryan Johansson. And that's got to happen as they move forward here into Game 6.
There was a play last night that drew the ire of Hurricanes fans, and there was certainly a play last night that drew the ire of Predators fans. Do either fan bases have beef with NHL officiating? We'll get into that coming up next. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Robbie Stanley. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth and Robbie Stanley here with you on this Wednesday evening. Slapshot Radio coming up at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. Penalty Box Radio at 8 o'clock. So the Game 5 reaction continues as the Preds lose Game 5 in overtime by a score of 3-2. Their season is on the line tomorrow night in Game 6 on home ice. Pre-game at 7:30, puck drop at 8:30. All the action heard here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Robbie, let's start the officiating woes, or let's say controversy, not woes, but controversy, in the second period as the Preds are leading 2-1 after Jakob Trenin's second goal, which, by the way, hat tip to the Yak attack for scoring a pair of goals last night unexpectedly.
Pierre Maguire referred to him as Jakob Trenoff in the game last night. That was good.
I'm sure Pierre Maguire is not the first nor the last to mispronounce Trenin's name on a broadcast near you. But the goalie interference call where Carolina appears to have tied the game, puck coming in from the blue line, going off of it. It looked like either Johansson skate or Stahl skate in front. There were like six bodies in front of UC Saros. Like UC Saros didn't have a chance, even if he wasn't interfered with, to stop that puck because it was just a massive humanity in front of him. But the puck bounces in. Carolina appears to have tied it. And John Hines challenges for goalie interference. Now, a little nugget that Adam Vingan threw out there last night was that is John Hines' first challenge as head coach of the Nashville Predators. Crazy. And they overturn it because, as the NHL says, Warren Fogle crossing the front of the crease makes contact with UC Saros and did not let Saros play his position. And anyone who looks at the replay but most people that look at the replay probably come away with the conclusion that it wasn't Warren Fogle interfering with UC Saros as much as it was Roman Josi interfering with his own goaltender. And something that we hear from Rod Brindamore here in a moment is that don't really think UC Saros really had a chance to make the save anyway, with how far the puck was away from the scrum and deflecting in, where it's not like it went right through UC Saros. So anyway, Canes fans lost their minds, not only in the arena, but on social media. They thought it was the worst call ever. National media started chiming in about what is goalie interference, and it sparked the whole goalie interference debate again. Some people agreed with it. Where did you stand?
I'll be honest with you. When I first saw that John Hines was going to challenge it, I literally texted you and I texted Rex Rode, and I said, I don't know if this is a pretty good idea from John Hines here, because the angle I saw initially was just the straight shot. And it's Roman Josi tangled up with UC Saros. And, you know, their bodies everywhere flying around. And I thought, they're not going to win this challenge. I saw the overhead, and on the overhead shot, Warren Fogle does initiate contact with UC Saros. Now, it's not a lot. It's not a lot of contact. I'm not even sure that it bothered UC Saros, the contact that Warren Fogle initiated. But that's when I first thought the Predators might have a chance to win this challenge. But the simple answer is, Porth, I had no clue whether or not they're going to win that challenge. And to me, that's half of the problem with this, is every time we get into a goaltender interference discussion, you could show the same play to 100 different people, and 52 are going to say it's this, 48% are going to say it's that. And at the end of the day, I don't think we're any the wiser as to what goaltender interference is and what it's not. So that, to me, is a big issue in the game. I realize things happen And it fast. Joe Rexroth pointed out this morning, like, Chris Mason thought the goal was going to stand. Pierre McGuire said it's no way that it could count. Like, that to me is a perfect summation of what this argument is. So I've watched the play several times since it happened. To me, I can see the argument for goaltender interference. If I was the one making the call, I'm not calling it because I thought it was more Roman Josi than it was Warren Fogle on that play.
Yeah. I mean, the point that you bring up is that it's playing roulette anytime that a goalie interference is in question. And John Hines, apparently very good at playing roulette, because apparently, if that goes the other way and the call stands, Carolina goes on the power play. And with the surge that they were going through at that point in the game, and then you tie it, you get the crowd all jacked up by tying it at 2-2. I had a feeling watching it, thinking like you, that they probably weren't going to come out on top of that, thinking that Carolina was probably going to score on the power play and make it 3-2 because of a lost challenge. But props to John Hines and, you know, Lawrence Filoni, you know, back in the video room flagging that for John Hines. But that was interesting. And so were Rod Brind'Amour's comments after the game regarding the goalie interference. Here was what Rod Brind'Amour, two games after criticizing the officiating, trying to bite his tongue and then not bite his tongue.
Rod, did you get a satisfactory explanation on the goalie interference review on the one that was taken off the board? Kind of what did you see there?
How do I answer that? I want to give you a good answer. Here's the deal. I get why they called the goalie interference. You know, Fogues was there initially, and had that shot come in initially, I think it's goalie interference. But it didn't come initially. So then he gets out, and their guy clearly pushes him and interferes with the goalie. It's not our guy. There's no chance he's making that save anyway. Like, it's going wide, hits our skate, goes in. There needs to be a little more common sense on that, than in my opinion. You know, that's clearly their guy preventing the goalie from making the save, not our guy. So that's my take on it. I got a different explanation, but, you know, it is what it is.
That was Rod Brind'Amour following the game last night, talking about the goalie interference call that did not go Carolina's way, as they had their second goal of the night in the second period wiped off the board. Now, Robbie, I did not agree with Rod Brind'Amour's assessment of the officiating following game three. I thought he was exaggerating what the situation truly was to try to get additional calls in game four, which that worked. This one, I kind of agree with him that some common sense needs to come into play on some of these goalie interference calls, whether a goal is wiped out or not, that Warren Fogle, what he did with Saros really didn't have any effect on Saros being able to stop that puck.
Yeah, I agree to a point. Now, what I don't agree with is throwing out that there's no way he's making the save, because you have no idea whether or not there's any way he's making the save. I mean, we've seen UC Saros make some pretty good saves. So that's fair. I hear what he's saying there. I agree with him to a point. I think the counter argument from the NHL on that would be, well, how in the world do you know whether or not he's going to make the save? There's a body on top of him. So that would be my counter argument if I'm the NHL. But to his point, you know, if that shot comes straight through and Fogle's there and he initiates the contact, I don't think this is all that controversial of a decision. It's goaltender interference.
Yeah.
The letter of the law, and I think where you get into some trouble sometimes with this call, is how long is long enough for a goaltender to reset and to be responsible again for his actions in the net and his ability to save the puck. Like, did enough time pass last night from Fogle's initial contact to when Roman Josi was all over UC Saros to where it's no longer on Warren Fogle? Like, that is what gets left up to interpretation. That's why I think Canes fans were upset last night. Speaking of, they're pretty salty. I've noticed that. Canes fans a little salty on Twitter.
They are very salty, and I tried to poke the bear a little bit last night on Twitter with Canes fans, because I know a few of them follow me now, and some did respond, and they weren't very happy with me saying that this call that we're talking about wasn't going to help the fact that Carolina fans think that the NHL is out to get them in this series. A tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic comment by me. yeah, you know, all 31 fan bases think the NHL is out to get them. So,
yes.
Carolina fans, you are not alone on that. But speaking of salty, Preds fans were salty with what went down in overtime. And we talked about it briefly about Alexander Carrier committing the interference penalty while the Predators are on the power play in overtime. And a lot of Preds fans think that it was a dive by Sebastian Aho, or that the penalty was not warranted at that time in overtime. But, Robbie, I'm not saying that this is right, but what this came across to me as in live time, and especially today going back and watching it again in overtime, was that it felt like the classic makeup call by the officials after calling a borderline penalty right before then, where Brady Shea gets called for a hold on Mikael Granlund, where he only held Granlund for a split second and Granlund did sell it. And Shea gets the penalty, and then what, a minute later, Carrier gets the penalty. And I understand it is the natural instinct to just jump to that. Like Kyle on Twitter, who I enjoy, I've met Kyle before. I enjoy conversating with him on Twitter. But, you know, last night he basically said that loss is 100% on the officials. And that, you know, that there's no one else or nothing else to blame for that loss. And I just don't agree. Like, I don't think as Preds fans, you can look at that game and just pin it on the officiating when you did get a break go your way in the second period.
Well, you got a break to go your way in the second period. You had plenty of chances to win the game in regulation as well. So it's not purely on officiating. I will say, I mean, look, of course, you know this. I enjoy every 4 years, usually every 4 years, the Olympics come around. And one of the things that I enjoy the most is watching the diving. Like, I think it's incredible how they're able to contort their bodies that way and to make as little of a splash as possible. And as somebody who's been eating a few too many cheeseburgers the last few years and has tried to do that, it's been something that's become increasingly difficult in my own life. So I appreciate it. That was an Olympic-level dive last night from Sebastian Aho. So I think he deserves credit for that. It was impressive. I wonder if Finland could use his services in the Summer Olympics coming up. But I thought it was a makeup call. I mean, you could see him on the replay. He's looking behind him, and he's trying to determine, oh, there's Alex Carrier right there. I'm going to run right into him and then fall down like I've been shot in the stands by Jason Bourne. I mean, that's basically what happened last night with Sebastian Aho. And look, I get it. I totally agree with everything you just said. I think that's exactly what happened. I think the referees wanted to even things up. I will say, though, that drives me nuts about referees in the NHL. That's something that really grinds my gears. I can't stand it. You hear all the time the referees don't want to be the reason that an outcome is determined in the playoffs, especially when you get to overtime. And I understand the thinking behind that, but a lot of times when you approach it that way, you end up becoming a reason that the game falls a certain way. Like that's what ends up happening. So, look, I hear you. I did think on the Granlund play that he sold it. I also think he got held about three times before that, and they didn't call it.
It wasn't
and
Granlund.
They just, well, you're right. It wasn't Granlund.
I think that was Janot that Brady Shea practically tackled in the corner. But if you're not going to call that, then why are you calling the one on Granlund? Like, it's the consistency of NHL officiating, or lack thereof, that has a lot of not just Preds and Canes fans up in arms right now, but NHL fans as a whole. Like, how many coaches have complained about the officiating in the first round?
Well, it's a big story. It's a big story league-wide, and it's a shame because – here we are again. The Stanley Cup playoffs are off to an awesome start. Like, this first round, for the most part, other than a couple of series, has been awesome to watch. And the officiating has become a huge story in the NHL, and that should not be the case. I brought up this morning an example, like Connor McDavid. He's gone eight straight games in the playoffs, has not drawn a penalty. If you watch Connor McDavid play for 15 seconds, you can't tell me there's no way that he's drawn a penalty in these playoffs. He's the fastest player in the world. It's not even close. Like, this is a huge problem. And the word you brought up is the biggest part of it, consistency. there's not much consistency. And that to me is when you start to get into frustration from teams, from coaches, and from players and fans as well. Now, I'll say this, you know, part of the discussion on the referees in this series came from Brendan Moore. I thought he was way too whiny after game three. He was whining about the officiating when half the penalties called on his team were delay of games over the glass.
Yep.
I mean, that just is what it is at that point. So I do think there's been a little bit too much whining going on about it too, which I'm also not a fan of. Here we are. We're six games now or five games now into a series, and we're talking about the officiating, and that seems to be a pretty consistent theme this year.
Well, I wish people were talking about this series and the hockey being played in this series, or the Tampa Florida game series, I should say, which has been intense, enthralling hockey for the most part. The Islanders Penguins series has been fun. I mean, you can tell those two teams just do not like each other. The Vegas Minnesota series has been fun as well. Like there's just been a lot of great hockey so far in round one of the playoffs, and it's a shame that a lot of the storylines are centered around NHL officiating and not the hockey that we're seeing on the ice. I mean, you can make an argument that this Preds-Kane series has been the best one so far, and I don't think a lot of people would have expected that. I think Islanders-Penguins would be right there with it. It feels pretty similar with how intense the games have been and how the series has gone, but, you know, I wish the talk would be about the hockey and not the officiating. But coming up next, we'll get to the hockey, and there's a really, 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 really big game tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Game six between the Preds and the Canes. The Preds will look to stave off elimination and force an unbelievable game seven for Saturday night. We'll get to all of that coming up next here on the other side. Ryan Porth, joined by Robbie Stanley here this evening on Preds Insiders. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental and sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. More Preds Insiders next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Roman, the good thing you're coming back to Bridgestone. There's going to be even more fans in the building on Thursday night, and the home team keeps winning in this series. So is that a good thing to rally around now?
Yeah, I mean, we're excited to go home. Those two games at home were unbelievable. The crowd is obviously always gives us extra boost at home, and we know it's gonna be rocking in there. And we gotta go home and win one at home.
That was Preds captain Roman Josi following last night's Game 5 overtime defeat in Carolina, as the Preds are coming back home for Game 6 of this back-and-forth wild series between the Preds and Hurricanes, looking to stave off elimination for the fourth time ever on home ice, where a Game 6 victory would force a Game 7. We'll get to that here in just a matter of a few minutes, because there are some interesting implications on the line there.
Yes,
there are. But, you know, Roman Josi there talking about the home crowd. The home ice advantage has been distinct in this series. I don't know if it's been as distinct in other series. I don't think it's a coincidence that the series with the home team winning each of the first five games has been the most attended series in round one of the playoffs, where the Canes started with 12,000 for games one and two. The Preds then had 12,000+ for games three and four. Canes had 12,000 game five. The Preds will have 14,000 for game six. And if there is a game seven, the Canes will now have 15,000+ as they basically try to one-up each other in the attendance department. But I wonder how much that's going to come into play tomorrow night. I don't know if it truly means anything. I mean, each of games three and four could have gone the other way with one simple bounce in Carolina's direction. But it does feel like this Predators team has been making an emphasis through the media, the importance of this home crowd. And if there was ever a game where it's going to be as important as ever, it's tomorrow night in a do-or-die game six for the Preds.
Yeah, they need it to be huge. I think it has been huge. And Johansson talked about it after game four. I mean, they played a lot of hockey in those two games at Bridgestone Arena. And it can get exhausting. It can be very, very taxing on the body when you start getting deep into double overtime. And I do think having the crowd, you know, having that energy that they give you, I think that can be the difference in a series. Now, hopefully tomorrow night doesn't go to double overtime, because then they're going to still be playing hockey at like 2:30 in the morning. So nobody wants to see that. But I do think the Predators, they feel confident coming back home. I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that. Yeah, they're down 3-2 in the series. Their backs are against the wall. I don't feel like the Predators feel like that they've just been totally outmanned the last few games and in this series. I feel like the Predators feel like they've been right there with Carolina. It's been a play or two that's been the difference in the series so far. And you've just got to make those plays at home. Like, we're having a completely different conversation right now if Ryan Johansson makes one play last night. If Cali Yarncroke makes one play last night. We're having a totally different talk right now. We're talking about the Predators coming home for game six with an opportunity to close this thing out. To their credit, that's how close they've made this. And honestly, like, I thought, you know, after the first game, I picked Carolina originally to win this series in six. And after the first game, I was like, oh boy, all right. Maybe I've been a little bit too friendly to the Predators here in my predictions. But it's played out, I think, admirably for the Predators at this point. They've made this a heck of a series. You're coming back home. You got the last change. We talked about that earlier in the show. That feels like that's been absolutely huge so far in this series. You need to be able to generate more offense. I look at Alex Nedeljkovic. He made some huge saves in game four, especially, where I thought he was really good. But Alex Nedeljkovic is not somebody in net for Carolina that I'm just shaking my boots about if I'm the Predators. You got to find a way to get to him, and you got to find a way to get to him more often. I like the Predators' chances coming back home in game six. I really do. I think they're going to be in a good headspace mentally, and I think there's going to be a lot of energy in that building. And I expect early in that game them to come out on Carolina in the offensive zone.
I'm going to make a bold prediction right now.
Okay.
Nedeljkovic does not finish game six.
Ooh, I like that.
I think the Preds, this is a team that has responded with their backs against the wall really all season. They didn't have any other choice in mid-March if they wanted to make the playoffs. I think they're really going to feed off that energy, and they're going to come out guns a-blazing in the first period. And either two quick ones or perhaps maybe even three, you know, in the first 20 to 30 minutes, and they're going to chase Nedeljkovic. That's a bold prediction on my part.
I like that. That's a Ryan Forth bold prediction right there. To your point, I agree with you 100% that they're going to come out and they're going to be on fire. And I said this heading in to game three as well. I guess it's great to come out and it's great to have the energy. You got to find a way to make it count. Like, you can't go through the first 20 minutes, you're dominating play, and you get to the end of the period and the game's tied. Like, you got to find a way to build a lead. Like, Adam Vidgen had an incredible stat this morning on Robbie and Rexrode. This game's been within one goal 96% of the time in the series. 96%. Like, if you're the Predators, what could your game look like with a multi-goal lead in this series? You got to find a way to see if you can build that early in this game in game six.
Well, to your point, Carolina did not feed off their early storm that they threw at the Preds, and it was tied after the first intermission. And after that, the Preds were able to play their game for the most part. And the Canes still won, but they really had to grind it out to come away victorious last night in game five. If you're going down to the game tomorrow or in the area of Bridgestone Arena, please know that starting at 3:00 in the afternoon, the Preds are offering free COVID-19 vaccinations on the Arena Plaza with no appointment necessary. So this is officially hosted by the Metro Public Health Department. So some cool stuff going on there. So if you've been on the fence and want to get the single dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it will be available to anybody over the age of 18. So cool thing that the Nashville Predators and the Health Department here locally are doing tomorrow night, all the way through the end of the first period of game six tomorrow night. So just make that mental note if you're headed down to downtown tomorrow afternoon. Now, the Duchesne Forsberg Johansson line that we discussed earlier, think this is going to be a game where they have to step up in a big way. And I get the sense, Robbie, that even though Duchesne and Johansson were phenomenal in games 3 and 4, I think how a lot of fans view them going into the offseason, especially if they do not win tomorrow night, could kind of hinge on how they look tomorrow night. And this is a really, really big game for that trio. Philip Forsberg could potentially get a contract extension as soon as the offseason officially begins in July. So not to say that they wouldn't, you know, re-sign Forsberg or that they'd trade him because of one game, but I think a lot is riding on this one game for those three individually and as a trio.
Well, I think so too. And look, let's be honest here. If they come out and they lose tomorrow, people are going to look back at game 3 and game 4 for Johansson and Duchesne specifically, and they're going to say, all right, well, they were really good for two games. What good does that do anybody? That's going to be what people say. And I'm not saying that's unfair. I mean, these guys have got to get their game to another level, and not only get it there, they got to keep it there. That's the challenge. That's what they're paid to do. You're paid to be a difference maker once playoff time comes around. And so far, I thought Johansson and Duchesne both were phenomenal in games 3 and in game 4. Outside of those two games, it's not been enough so far in this series. So if they come out tomorrow and they light it up again and you force a game 7 and you have a chance to win that game 7, I do. I think they will be viewed totally different than they are right now. If you come out and you lose tomorrow and they're not factors in the game, people are going to look back at those performances in game 3 and 4 and they're just going to say, all right, well, they got hot for two games and that was it. There's still a huge problem that the Predators have with those two as they move forward and try to figure out what their future is here. So, look, I'm not saying everything's going to be cured because I still think those two have a long way to go to completely repair their image with this fan base. There's a lot that needs to happen. But rising up to the occasion, rising up to the moment when your backs are against the wall in game 6 and coming out with an elite-level performance, because that's what we need to see, an elite-level performance from that line, that would go a long way towards, I think, getting them back in the good graces with some Predators fans.
Well, Johansson and Duchesne specifically were removed from the power play unit heading into game 3, and they have not really sniffed any of the important time on the power play in games 3, 4, or 5. Do you make an adjustment if you're John Hines for game 6 and put him back on the power play?
I would. I know that the power play has looked a little bit better, especially in terms of getting into the zone and setting things up. But to me, part of what the power play comes down to is you got to have your best finishers in there. And Johansson and Duchesne are two of their best finishers. And I hate to keep harping on this play because he's been really good all year long. But I think about the Yarncroke play last night. Like, if that's Ellie Tolvanen or if that's Matt Duchesne, does it look a little different? Like, are you able to get a shot off there and place that and score a goal there? I don't know. I mean, we'll never know the answer to that. But to me, you know, I still think from a talent perspective, Johansson and Duchesne are two guys that you feel good about getting in there. And if you need to have a high-skilled play, those are two guys that can make it. At some point, like, to me, not having them on the power play, if they're going to be here and they're going to be in this lineup, that's not a long-term thing that's sustainable to me. I would make that adjustment heading into game 6.
I 100% agree, and I would be pretty disappointed, actually, if Duchesne and Johansson – look, it was clear that John Hines was sending a message. The message was received in games 3 and 4. I think it's time to put him back out there on the power play. If you're going to have power play opportunities against this Carolina penalty kill, which is very good – You need your top horses out there. And some people will debate whether or not Duchesne and Johansson are your top horses. But when it comes to talent and players that need to be your top horses, those two are absolutely among that crew that need to be on the power play, whether it's on the first or second unit.
Well, very quickly, what it reminds me of, and it's a little bit different of a situation, but you think back to 2012, Alex Radulov, Andre Kostitsyn get suspended. They win without him, and they keep him out of the lineup the next game.
Yep.
That did not work. Like, it's not the same situation, but I don't think the long-term view is, hey, with the power play worked in game 3 without Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchesne, let's keep him off of that. Like, at some point, you got to put him back on.
pregame begins at 7:30 with some bonus Preds coverage with Preds Extra starting at 6 tomorrow night. Chase McCabe will be joined by Robbie Stanley for a portion of that show leading up to Darren McFarland's pregame at 7:30 and then puck drop at 8:30. So tomorrow night, there's a lot riding on this game both the Nashville Predators and most importantly, obviously, myself. I'm kidding. Hashtag sarcasm.
Kinda.
But if there is a game seven, you know, I don't like to talk about myself on this show, but this is something that I think a lot of people who have gotten married before can relate to, so I'm going to bring it up. If there is a game seven on Saturday, that just so happens to be the day of my wedding.
Yes.
And it has been an interesting couple of weeks ever since the schedule came out in terms of trying to figure out what we are going to do. We are going to have a TV at the reception for people if there is a game seven, because there are a lot of people that will be at this reception that will have interest in watching a game seven between the Preds and Hurricanes. Again, this all hinges on the Preds winning tomorrow night. But, man, it has certainly been the dilemma of dilemmas in the Porth household over the last couple of weeks of, like, we originally scheduled the wedding for late June 2020 to not conflict with any sort of Stanley Cup run.
Yeah.
Any sort of playoff run. Then last May, we reschedule it for Memorial Day weekend 2021 because we had to postpone it, even though we still got married in front of family. So it's a very convoluted situation. So thank you, COVID.
It is.
So the reception going on Saturday night might be at the same time as a game seven. And that is going to be a very stressful evening if there's a game seven.
I'll be honest with you, I'm pulling hard for it. I am going to enjoy every last second of this. I really am. I'll be at your wedding on Saturday. It's going to be a great time. I am very much looking forward to it, but I am also very much looking forward to trying to catch and sneak you around, see if we can get you a couple of glimpses of the game seven while it's going on, while also trying to avoid your lovely bride catching you doing so. I am very much looking forward to this challenge that could be in front of me coming up on Saturday night.
Well, I have been told that the TV is there for the guests and not for me there is a game seven. You know, I have agreed to some compromises along the way of, you know, getting some glimpses for a couple minutes at a time with the caveat that it's a close game, which it probably will be knowing these teams if there is a game seven. So that has been kind of in the backdrop of this entire series for both me and my wife. And
you were looking okay there for a second. And then all of a sudden, it looks like game seven may be pretty likely.
Well, after game two, I didn't think – I thought we were in the clear. Not that I was happy about that, because I would love to see – and look, I will be at the game tomorrow night. I will be rooting on the Preds and probably lose my voice again going into the weekend. And if they win, then we're just going to have to suck it up. I mean, at that point, then it's just going to be you know, a story that goes along with that wedding, and it'll be interesting.
The Alabama LSU game was happening in the middle of my wedding, and we found a way to make it work. It happened. That was the Joe Burrow 2-0 Tagovailoa game, so it was pretty epic.
It was a pretty epic game, and there were people at your wedding that were heavily invested in said game.
There were.
So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Chaos.
Hopefully there is a game seven so that we can experience that chaos. I know I'm rooting for that, and there are some people that aren't rooting for that that I know very well. So
yes.
We'll see how this goes. But Robbie Stanley of NHL.com and Robbie and Rex Road, thank you as always for your time here on Preds Insiders.
My pleasure, my friend.
For Robbie Stanley, I'm Ryan Porth. You've been listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and company, followed by Penalty Box Radio at 8 with Justin Bradford and company. Keep it locked right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.